You can meet and hear Anthony Esalen, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Roseborough at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Issuesetc.org.
What's your level of certainty that we should believe that he has committed something between sexual assault and sexual harassment?
100%. There's no question in my view that he is lying. And, you know, frankly, all you have to do is go back and take a look at that Fox News interview. And if you look at the Fox News interview, you realize that he is completely full of shit. You cannot reconcile what he told Fox News with reality, with the yearbook, with Dr. Ford, with Ms. Ramirez, with my client, with the students from Yale. You just cannot reconcile what he has stated and his testimony yesterday. I mean, I thought the theatric performance was legendary. You know, maybe we should give him an Oscar, but we shouldn't put him on the U.S. Supreme Court. All right.
That's attorney Michael Avenatti being interviewed at the 2018 Texas Tribune Festival in Austin, Texas, about Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. He was much in the news and remains in front of the cameras as much as he can place himself there. But what happened to that story of the year? The biggest story in 2018, probably. Brett Kavanaugh accused of rape, gang rape, multiple rapes, running a rape ring. And then after he is confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court, the media very quickly goes silent on the issue of whether or not he would be impeached after the midterm elections. Where did that story go and why? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, October the 31st, Reformation Day. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Molly Hemingway of Fox News is going to join us here for the first half hour. We're going to try and answer that question about the Democrats, media, and Kavanaugh follow-through. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel on God providing manna, water, and quail. And then in hour two of Issues Etc. on this Reformation Day, Issues Etc. Reformation Week concludes. Our theme has been Paths to Lutheranism. Today, we'll talk about Pastor Chris Roseborough's path to Lutheranism from evangelicalism. Molly Hemingway is a regular guest. She joins us to talk about the Democrats, the media, and Kavanaugh follow-through. She's a Fox News contributor, senior editor at The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled, Why Did Media and Democrats Abandon Their Investigation into Brett Kavanaugh? Molly, welcome back.
It's great to be here with you.
So is this just another example, this sudden silence on what was arguably the biggest story of 2018? Is this just another example of what our mutual friend Hans Feeney has called outrage addiction? The media is simply dropped Kavanaugh and is out looking for its next fix of outrage.
I think in a way it is that, but in another way it's not. We see this type of hysteria about various issues that are near and dear to the media's heart, where they pick it up and they run with it and then they drop it. In this case, I think that the picking it up and dropping of it had very specific political reasoning behind it. You know, it's worth remembering what the claims were against Kavanaugh, that he was a serial gang rapist who had, you know, spent many years terrorizing women and should not be on the Supreme Court. There were many allegations placed against him, from the plausible, like somewhat remotely plausible, if unsubstantiated, to the completely outlandish and also unsubstantiated. They were taken extremely seriously by the media, and it completely dominated and controlled our media environment from mid-September to early October. And then it was dropped. Now, I think it might have been dropped because people started to realize in the media and in the Democratic Party that this story was not going so well for them as they hoped, that people were concerned about the media coverage and the way it seemed to presume guilt, particularly in the context of there being no evidence to support that guilt. And so it was kind of dropped that way. But these people did claim that they believed the accusers, even the outlandish ones, that they absolutely believed them and that they really felt that a serial gang rapist was about to be placed on the Supreme Court. Now, if they were worried about that as he was about to be confirmed, why wouldn't they be worried about it now that he is confirmed? It's not like any of the facts have changed other than that he's now on the highest court as opposed to the second highest court. And if they really believed it, it's kind of bizarre that they aren't still working to investigate it, particularly since what they said they really needed was more time to do that investigation.
So is it beginning to look like what many people suspected from the very get-go, simply a stalling technique, a rather vicious stalling technique to put off the confirmation and perhaps sink it if possible, essentially a political circus rather than real allegations with real concerns about the safety of women past and present?
Well, I think the proof of what you think is in how you're acting now about it. Now, for someone like me, I never found any of the claims to be particularly believable. I generally wait for evidence before I think about whether someone's guilty, and that never came despite a lot of effort to try and come forward with evidence. But other people claim that they did believe these women, and they did so in very official ways, you know, on major media and in the Senate record. Senator Dianne Feinstein read some of the most outlandish. She read the name and the claim from some of, an outlandish accuser, who's Julie Swetnick, Michael Avenatti's client, into the record at the reopened hearing of Brett Kavanaugh. And if they really believe this, they should be almost more concerned about it now than they were then, because he actually did make it to the Supreme Court and he can be impeached and justice could still be achieved. That they're not doing it is very bizarre. Now, maybe they are waiting until the midterms to see if they get control of the House of Representatives, at which point they'll reopen investigations. But that doesn't explain why the media have dropped it like a hot potato, because they don't need to wait for who is in control of the House to continue. And they were so concerned about it for that 3-week period, and they were doing everything in their power to bring out more stories. Now that they have more time, I mean, if someone were able to actually show that Brett Kavanaugh was a rapist, they would win the Pulitzer. So it's very weird that no one's even trying to do that, much less that many people aren't trying to do it, but it's completely gone off of the front pages or any pages of the newspaper, and it's no longer on the airwaves either.
So if you had an opportunity to talk to a journalist who had basically gone all in on whatever the allegations were being made, not simply reporting, but as you know, journalists now opine as well as report on a regular basis, especially on broadcast television, and you had a few questions for them, what would those questions be?
The thing is, the error, if you're not going to continue to pursue this story, was to go all in. So if you were ever going to risk being in this posture now where you suddenly don't care about something as big as this, you probably should have been less credulous in mid-September when these allegations came forward. It is good for journalists to wait for evidence, to demand evidence before running wild with stories. I mean, some of the stories that came out about this were never corroborated in any way, and yet they went to print. That is a weakening of journalistic standards that is really inappropriate. So I would like to ask why they allowed those journalistic standards to be slaughtered, what they think about what that has done to their credibility, whether they think it makes them look like political hacks for having done this as a pure political stunt, as opposed to something where they were genuinely concerned about justice for women who've been tormented or abused by men in power. I'd ask why they're not asking every Democratic candidate whether he or she believed Ford and whether they support impeaching Kavanaugh and what they're going to do to put their actions where their rhetoric was in mid-September to early October. I'd like them to explain why we're not getting updates and what that means and why they've given up on the story. I think it's very bizarre and it's inexplicable, but I would love to see someone give an answer for what's going on.
Here's my theory, and I wonder what you think about it. I don't think it's outlandish really at all, and that is, at least on the media's part, the goal was not really to establish the truth or falsehood of anything there. They thrive on the fact that it's a he said, she said scenario. That you can keep going with that as long as you need to, but you only need to keep going with it long enough to establish the narrative. And once the narrative is established and the question mark is stamped over Brett Kavanaugh's forehead, you've done what you need to do.
It struck me that making a claim that is neither verifiable nor unverifiable and that produces a cloud of controversy and a flurry of stories all based on unsubstantiated stuff, it reminded me a lot of the allegations of Russia collusion between Donald Trump and treasonous collusion to steal an election. It was an unverifiable and unverified allegation. It has produced so many stories, it's unbelievable. But the goal was probably not for justice in either case, so much as you point out, to create a narrative to undermine the legitimacy of someone and render that person's work suspect for the rest of all time. But that's not justice. So if these allegations are true, the people need to be held accountable. If Donald Trump committed treason with Russia, he should be impeached. If Brett Kavanaugh is going around trying to rape women, he should not be sitting on the Supreme Court. Conversely, if these are false allegations, and if these reputations have been obliterated without appropriate evidence, if these people have had their lives nearly destroyed, the accusers should be held accountable. And journalists should be neutral on these questions and should hold their standards high so that they don't become witting or unwitting participants in a smear campaign or a defense operation. This is not what is needed for journalism at this moment in time. It couldn't be happening at a worse time. But the behavior post-confirmation really tells us a lot about how serious the media were about whether these claims were credible or not.
Molly Hemingway is our guest. She's a Fox News contributor. When we come back, we'll continue talking about the Democrats' media and the Kavanaugh follow-through. And we'll talk a little bit about what implications it may have or not have for the midterms.
Let's examine the response of our Christian community to the cultural turmoil regarding sexuality and children.
Licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Beverly Yonke talking about her presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
In 50 years, we've spiked to what is now a cultural crisis from what was a nearly non-existent issue. We can wring our hands, remain unacquainted with the fact, or simply remain silent and avoid the unpleasantries. Biblical sexuality and God's created order aren't polling well these days, while media talking heads gush about the joys and justice of violating natural law.
You can meet and hear Dr. Beverly Yonke making the case for a Christian response to the transgender child at Issues Etc.'s Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're committed to increasing LCMS faculty and staff members. This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago. If you are a member of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod with excellent professional credentials, please consider applying for our faculty or staff family. Current openings are posted at cuchicago.edu/HR.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Democrats, the media, and Kavanaugh follow-through with Molly Hemingway of Fox News. Christianity and culture will be a major topic of discussion at the next Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Dallas, Texas. You can meet and hear expert teachings on transgenderism, revisionist history, Western civilization, our first freedoms, and infant baptism. You can find out more and register at issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223 8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference is Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas. Molly, here's another Wilkin theory for the silence of the media. The media is silent now because they got the nagging sense that they were going to push it too far and activate Trump support going into the midterms.
It seems that dropping the story coincided with the realization that this campaign was going horribly for Democrats and their media water carriers. I think it actually made sense, if you take away the ethics of it all, to try this campaign to activate your own base, activate the Democratic base by fighting really hard against this nomination and doing so in a way that would probably cause Republicans to pull their own nomination. And that was not an unrealistic expectation given past behavior by Republicans. What threw everything into chaos was that for some reason, Republicans decided to stop going along with that. They decided not to cave and not to let unfounded allegations destroy a person and cause the nomination to be pulled. And what that did instead was activate the Republican base, which was the base that was showing very little motivation for the previous 2 years. And they were very frustrated. Once that became apparent and once polls started showing that particularly in Senate races, this was becoming a very hot topic, you just saw the story be dropped. But that is also a problem for Democrats and other people in the media, because there are certain things that should be a higher value than political gain. And this is particularly true for the media. If they genuinely believe what they claimed they believed about the seriousness and credibility of these allegations, the fact that he made it onto the Supreme Court should cause even more investigation, even more coverage. That instead they dropped it makes them seem just like Democratic partisans who care nothing about anything other than political concerns. That is very troubling for an industry that has already lost credibility and for whom a lot of people think they are already too close to the Democratic Party. It is very odd behavior. Again, Democrats can do things politically. That's kind of what's expected, in the same way that Republicans do things according to what's in their best political interest and sometimes don't care about the larger concerns. But the media shouldn't be operating as partisans one way or the other.
You had mentioned a moment ago Avenatti's claims and his client. I have a hard time keeping track of whether he has clients or only claims to have clients in some cases. Is it true that the Senate Judiciary Committee has referred that situation with some criminal implications?
So Michael Avenatti's client, Julie Swetnick, they worked together to claim that Kavanaugh was the ringleader of a secret underground gang rape cartel in high school, that she became witness to this when she was an adult and he was an underage minor, that she did nothing about it, even though she claimed she had witnessed 10 parties that featured gang rapes. This is an outlandish claim that no reasonable person should have taken seriously. So it was disconcerting to see Dianne Feinstein read her name into the Senate record and to see the media just run with her story as if anyone can make a claim, no matter how unsubstantiated, and make it public to destroy a man. The claims were so serious that one reporter said that Brett Kavanaugh should not be around children anymore. You know, he's had really, and he has two children of his own, and he coaches children's basketball teams. It's had real implications. There was no supporting evidence for it. He has been referred to the Department of Justice for criminal investigation, for obstruction of justice, conspiracy, fraud, along with Swetnick, because you should not be able to make claims that have no support at all. But there were other claims, too, that had no support. Another one, I think, has been criminally referred, and there are more that probably need investigation. Again, if he's guilty of what he's accused of, he should not sit on the court, and there are means to remove him. If he's not, the people who made false allegations should be prosecuted.
If you are staring into your Molly Hemingway brand magic eight ball and the Democratic Party made significant gains in the midterms, what is the answer that comes up to the question, will impeachment proceedings convene against Brett Kavanaugh?
It's an interesting question because they claim that they would start impeachment proceedings if they took the House. But then the chatter about that just completely dropped off. And the Democrats recently released a list of priorities they would be working on should they take the House. And investigations weren't anywhere on the list. I think they're aware that impeachment proceedings without supporting evidence would not go over very well with the larger American public. But on the other hand, their base really does believe, they really believe these allegations are true. And so if that's the case, you have a conflict between how to appease the base, which thinks it would be unconscionable to have someone on the Supreme Court who you could easily remove if you, if all you do is just prove that he is what you say he is. And that should not be that high of a bar, given the rather extreme claims that have been made against him. So I think it'll be a debate like with so many other debates for Democrats, no matter if they take the House or not. And it seems likely that, I mean, just historically, they're on the average number of seats that the party in power loses would be 24. And that's how much they need to take the House. So I think as a baseline, it's reasonable to say that they should be expected to take the House, if not by blue wave, which we've also heard all about, which would be 30 or more seats. That you're going to see a tension between the party, whether or not they take the House, about whether the path forward is to stop being so extreme or to get more extreme. And that's a decision they're going to have to make for themselves. And it you might think that it's unreasonable to get more extreme, but in this climate, you have a real division between moderates and more radical supporters in the Democratic base.
Back to the media for a moment. On November 13th of 2016, the publisher and executive editor of the New York Times admitted that they got the election wrong and promised to make changes. Have you seen improvements in the last 2 years?
There was nothing so humiliating, or what should have been humiliating, for the major media as Donald Trump's election in 2016. It was objective proof that they got everything wrong in their coverage of the 2016 election, which everyone pretty much uniformly assured the American public Donald Trump had no chance of winning, that he was unlikable to normal people, that he wouldn't just lose, that you would see massive losses in the Senate and the House for Republicans. Objectively speaking, they were just wrong. And the proper response to that would have been to do what New York Times editor said, reform how they were covering things, stop pushing narratives, and start just reporting the news and caring less about your opinion and more about what's actually happening, and get to know people who are different than people in D.C. and New York. There's a whole country out there, to make sure that your hiring practices keep you from being in a bubble, to make sure that you have people who are hired and promoted and put in positions of authority who don't all share your very narrow view of the world. I would say not only has that not happened, unbelievably, things have gotten not just worse, but much worse. You're seeing open opinionated commentary in news stories even worse than you saw before. You're seeing an active campaign against the president and the people who voted for him across many media outlets and from major media figures. It's getting more hysterical, more unhinged, and it is creating a separation between the people who rely on the media to actually give them news and information and the media themselves, who seem to think that they're a very important part of the Democratic Party. And so I wonder what we're going to see after this midterm election. Again, the media have assured us it'll be a blue tsunami, which would mean that the Republicans would, of course, lose the Senate because they only have it by the slimmest of majorities right now. And yet, I'm not sure that's going to happen. So once again, after 2 years of claiming that Donald Trump is a disaster, that he's on his way out, that he's going to be impeached, that he's, the walls are closing in, the Senate is going to be lost, the House is going to have, you know, a loss of the type that Obama fared in his first midterm election, 63 seats. I don't think that's actually going to happen. And it just does a lot to, again, weaken that relationship between the people and the media.
Quickly and finally, I saw something just yesterday that made me think of you, and it was that CNN, in terms of its ratings, has been topped by Hallmark made-for-TV movies on a regular basis in their primetime slots. Now, part of that is my wife watching those movies every evening for the holiday season. But what do you make of not just bad but abysmal ratings for probably the flagship of media bias, CNN?
sometimes you hear about what's happening with the American public and you think they show bad taste, but I would agree. Hallmark movies are far more worthwhile to watch than probably most things on television. Also, HGTV tops CNN in the ratings, and that's another good decision. But CNN is struggling to figure out its niche. It used to try to present itself as a trusted name in news, and now it's just trying to present itself as much more resistance-focused than even MSNBC. That's not working well for them in the ratings, but they still have a lot of power and sway among media elites in New York and D.C., so I'm not sure that they will be incentivized to avoid what they're doing to their brand. But it is, you know, I work for Fox, so I am biased on this, but it is just a shame because you want to have multiple networks that are good and that are competing with each other to be good, and that's not happening right now.
Molly Hemingway is a Fox News contributor, senior editor at The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled, Why Did Media and Democrats Abandon Their Investigation into Brett Kavanaugh? You can follow her on Twitter, at MZ Hemingway, and read her columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly, thanks.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson, God providing manna, water, and quail. Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel will be our guest. Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer is the author of our book of the month for October, Reading Isaiah with Luther. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Learn how the conscience is a gift from God and how only through Christ can you receive a clean conscience in Reading Isaiah with Luther, the Issues Etc. book of the month, Reading Isaiah with Luther.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Holy Cross Lutheran Church, Moline, Illinois, invites you to join us in receiving the Lord's gifts in word and sacrament. Sunday services are at 8:15 and 10:45 a.m., with Bible class and Sunday school at 9:30 a.m. We are located in the Quad Cities at 4107 21st Avenue, Moline, Illinois. Welcome in the name of our Lord.
Concordia University, Wisconsin is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During October, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Concordia University, Wisconsin. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.